featuring Tammy Curve, Scottish Highland Dancer, Danette Rush, and Missy Farina, the Dunedin City Pipe Band.
Thank you all. We'd like to apologize a little bit for our numbers today. As some of you may know, the Queen's yacht, the Britannia, is docked in Harbor Island in Tampa, which is the area we're from. And most of our band are playing at goings on there all this weekend. So we're only a small portion of our band here today. Well, the dance was traditionally done by men. That's why a lot of the movements are very athletic and masculine. It was also usually done on a sword, or a shield, which was held up by some of the other clansmen, and the dancer would dance on top of the shield, which is why you'll see there's not a lot of foot movement. She normally stays in about the one spot on the floor, and that is because of the small area on the shield that they would have danced on.
Thank you.
Okay, the next dance that Tammy is going to do for you is called the Chantreuse. Truce is another name for trousers. This dance, what it tells is the story of in about 1200, when the British ruled over the Scots, they forbid the Scots to play the bagpipe and to wear the kilt. They thought that it was warlike, and they forbid them to wear them. In the dance, you'll see Tammy kicking, and it imitates them kicking off the trousers, and you'll see the movements are very restrictive. About halfway through the dance, you'll see she's dancing a little bit freer, and it's when the Scots finally won back their right to wear the kilt and take back their heritage there. Today, and we're done for the moment, but at 2:30, which is actually just in a few more minutes, we will be playing in the competitions area by the sheepdog, the sheep herding demonstration, and there will be a Highland Games demonstration of the caber toss and sheep toss following that, if you would all like to join.
That this afternoon will talk to us about food. food ways, which are a very important aspect of folk ways in all culture. They are, from the left, May Edith Ram, who's going to talk to us about African American holiday traditions. Patty Rang of St. Augustine, who's going to talk with us about Scottish holiday traditions, and Gloria Ramator of Jacksonville, who will talk to us about Irish holiday traditions. Ladies.
Thank you. I am May Edith Ram, and I represent M&M's Barbecue and Catering here in White Springs, Florida. And we're located about a mile and a half north of here. And we wanted to bring the whole building here, but since it was impossible, we just bought a bunch of good old ribs and everything that goes with barbecue. Now I suppose I'm supposed to be talking about holiday cooking. Is there any special type, the food or the desserts or what you would like to hear about all of them? I consider myself a cook, and I enjoy cooking every day, but Christmas is my most favorite part of the year, and I get all of these turkeys and smoked hams and fresh hams. When I say fresh hams, they haven't been smoked, and we take them and we just cook them up with all different types of spices and seasoning, because it's holiday cooking. And then we take all of these desserts, sweet potato pies, chocolate cakes, pineapple upside down cake, coconut pineapple cakes, fruit cakes. Oh boy, we have all sorts of cakes. Sour cream pound cakes, cream cheese pound cakes. And I am so sorry, I tried to save some, but I had some sour cream pound cakes with me. But they must have been delicious because they are all gone. And I like that part of it. Now, let me give you a recipe, or talk to you about something that I'm sure every Afro-American loves, and all of our neighbors from any different of our nations or whatever. If they try some of May's chicken giblet dressing. Now, this is what we do to make this dressing. We start out with cornbread, good old country baked cornbread. And we take this cornbread and we crumble it all up in a big pan. Of course, this is Christmas time. Then we take our chicken giblets. These are your chicken parts that we have boiled in stock, and we have chopped all the celery and bell pepper and onions and nuts and all different mushrooms, all different kinds of spices and seasonings. Then we take all this in this big pan, and we do it, of course, with our fingers, and we just scrunch it all up together there. And we add the giblets and the gravy to it, and we make it something not so soupy, but it's sort of like a gumbo now. And we take this dressing and we mix it all up. Then we take and we put it in a baker pan, and we bake it for about an hour. And when this is all done, we take it and we serve it with our turkey or our ham, whatever kind of meat we have selected. And we put this nice giblet gravy on it with all our vegetables and all. And this is what we call our chicken giblet dressing. Of course, it is very delicious. Yes? Oh, I'm sorry, sir. You are a cook. We put egg, of course, boiled eggs. Yes, in it. And it is very delicious. And now for my favorite cake. I have to have this cake at Christmas time. It is the coconut pineapple cake. And the cake, of course, is made of layers. And we start out with, of course, our all-purpose flour, 3 cups. Then we have, these are our ingredients. We have 2 cups of sugar. We add 5 eggs. We have 3 sticks of butter, real butter. Nothing else will do for a cake but butter. Let me tell you something real funny. I had my mother, she's a good cake baker. And we cater dinners out to Occidental every weekend. And I got all clustered up one weekend, and I asked her to help me bake my cakes. And I brought all this butter, and I carried it to Mom and all the ingredients. And when Mom fixed the cakes and brought it back, they were like cookies. Say, Mom, what happened to the cake? Oh, child, I substituted it with margarine. I said, no, never put margarine in a cake. Never, never. It's butter all the way. Now, let me tell you, get back to how I fixed this coconut pineapple cake. Of course, I said start out with 3 cups of all-purpose flour, 2 cups of sugar. Are you writing? 3 sticks of butter. I always use 5 or 6 eggs. I like a good cake. Okay, we have 1 cup of sweet milk. And of course, with all-purpose flour, you need 1 tablespoon of baking powder and 1/4 teaspoon of salt. I start this off by creaming my sugar, butter, and eggs until rich and smooth, very creamy. After I do this, I add my 3 cups of flour, 1 cup at a time. When I get all this done, I add 1 teaspoon of lemon extract. Because it is holiday cooking, I add a pinch of nutmeg or mace. We are doing this step by step. After this, we add the 1 cup of milk. And now you got your batter all ready for your coconut pineapple cake. After we get this in our pans and our layers, I like a high cake, so I use this to give you enough for 4 layers. Okay, we got our cake baking in the oven at 350 for 30 minutes. When we finish this, we take the cake out after it's cooked, and we let each layer cool. We let it cool for 15 minutes. Now we are ready to cream this cake. Of course, you can make your own frosting. I don't remember what to do with my vanilla frosting. So I'm just gonna say you can run out and buy some vanilla frosting. And we put this between each layer. We start out with 1 layer, cream it with vanilla frosting, add your pineapple preserve. It's easier, faster than making your own pineapple. Do each layer like this. When you get them all together, you got your mountain now. Cover this again with your vanilla frosting all over. Make it pretty fluffy and white. Cover the frosting with your coconut, which has been soaked in pineapple juice. 1/4 cup of pineapple juice will be sufficient. Get this coconut on this cake. Now you have your beautiful snowy white coconut pineapple cake. Add your decorative colors, Christmas decorative colors, red, green, a beautiful cake. And that's the recipe for my coconut pineapple cake. I hope some of you try it. And when you do, think of me. And I think that's enough for M&M's Barbecue. Thank you. Good.
Well, May has made us ready for Christmas, hasn't she? Or Sunday dinner, like we used to have Sunday dinners. Yes. I'm Patty Rang, and I am here doing the Scottish shortbread. Now, May's recipe is so complicated that you had to write it down. All you have to do is have 3 fingers for mine. 1 cup of flour, 1 stick of butter. Now, this is where we're the same. You can't use anything else but butter. I think all good cooks know that. But when you try to change things, it doesn't work. The last is 1, 2, 3 tablespoons of confection's sugar. People will substitute regular sugar, and I've even seen brown sugar. And it just depends if you really want to be traditional, but the Scots want to be traditional. We're going to mix this up in you cream your sugar and your butter together, and then add your flour as you would like in a pie crust, except that you don't have to be that precise, that delicate. This is something wonderful for children to do. This is a good way to start them out cooking, especially since they'll love eating the product so well. Traditionally, you take the dough and pat it out till it's fairly thin, from like a fourth of an inch, a little bit more than a fourth of an inch. And you would take a dinner plate and cut around it. Crimp the little edges with your finger and take a fork and prick the little holes around the top, because you want to let the air, the gases, come out. Otherwise, you have like blisters. It doesn't change the taste at all, but it's not quite as beautiful. Put it in your oven for 20 minutes for 350 degrees. If you have a fast oven or a hot oven, you need to watch it. And I would suggest the first couple of times that it's done, watch the temperature and watch the timing, because it depends on your oven. Not all of us have precise ovens. Then when you take it out, if you want to cut it into wedges, which is what is usually done, you need to do it while it's still warm and pliable so that you can cut through it, because once it's cool, it'll crack. And if you're going to transport it, I would suggest doing something less than a dinner plate. In fact, they're great as cookies, and this is what I would do with kiddos so that they could have their cookies and not ruin their dinner. And, you know, people who complain about the being on a cholesterol-free diet and the fact that there's butter in it, well, just take one cookie. But I'd like to see somebody just take one cookie. So start with little cookies, and they think they get more. In the holiday time, a woman in Scotland can wear her own personal tartan, her husband's tartan. But when she puts the tartan on a white evening dress. I did not feel that a white evening dress was appropriate here, so I wore white shorts and t-shirt. The tartan, when it's not made into anything, is a plaid. When you start wearing it, it's a tartan. Okay? No? Okay. I don't have a badge or a crest of my own, so I have not put a badge or crest on that. And I'm using the badge of the folk festival in Mount Balmoral. As though in every culture, their authorities, and with each family, you have different favorite recipes. Authorities have different, you know, they would like for you to use rice flour. In St. Augustine, there's no rice flour. I'm going to suggest you use the flour that's available. Some want you to use pastry flour. That's not necessary either, but you've got to use butter. Traditionally, the pie plate cutting out is the way you would want to do it, but they have plates, and I'll get down to show you that. This holds one batch. And you cook it right here in the plate. And then when it's out and it's still warm, you cut it. And you cut that one into squares since it's a square dish. This little one, you can pat it in there, and it's a mold. You drop it out. This is very modern, very American. Let's see. And these, this one got cold before I got to it, so it broke very neatly. What I would like for people to do is to make it all year round. And when the kids were here the other day, I all sent them home to do it over the weekend. So hopefully they did. Go on. Thank you. Oh, one more thing. I wish there were more people here because I have a cause. My cause is this. Children are unaware of their heritage, and they don't know enough to ask. And those people who have the heritage and carry on the cultures many times pass on before the children know the stories. And I would like the parents and the people who have the culture and the heritage to make sure those children have this to carry on. Because many times it will be lost in two generations. Okay, thank you.
In Ireland. Ireland is a small country. It's 300 miles long and it's 150 miles wide. The population is 3.1 million. Ireland is mostly religious holidays. St. Patrick's Day, which is one of Ireland's most renowned holidays, which is celebrated in America. Most cities close down for St. Patrick's Day. And every city in Ireland has a parade. All the other holidays, which are Easter, all the stores close from Friday till Monday. Christmas holidays are a week's festivities. And when I came to America, I had a terrible shock when I discovered that your stores, some of them do close for Christmas Day, but next day it's right back to work. I'm normally out of work for a week. And I'm going to go back the day after New Year's because I've had a very good time. Food in Ireland is mostly national foods and foods that are grown in your area. Now foods are imported to Ireland, different foods, mostly fruits, but the population in Ireland mostly live on things like meat, potatoes and eggs. Today at the show I brought Irish whole wheat bread, and in America it's known as Irish soda bread. Irish soda bread is a white bread and it can have currants in it. But Irish whole wheat bread is the most known bread. It's made in Ireland in the small farms and lots of people in cities make it, but mostly stores sell it like bakeries, cake shops, and it's made in a different way than it's made here in America. Most things in America are made with yeast. In Ireland, bread soda is used, baking soda. And we don't use that much yeast. Christmas time in Ireland is traditional turkey. We do potatoes in a different way in Ireland. We boil potatoes in Ireland with their skins on. In America, it's mostly baked potatoes. But in Ireland, if we're doing potatoes like that, they're put in the oven and you grease the potatoes and they're done in a dish. So it turns out that you've got a roast potato, and that's what it's traditionally known as. Another thing that's very popular in Ireland is Christmas pudding. Christmas pudding is made in every little farm in the whole of Ireland. It's made with raisins, sultanas, mixed fruits, and, of course, Irish whiskey. We use Irish whiskey in an awful lot of products. Children in Ireland learn to cook at school, so we have lots of cookery books, and the children are encouraged to cook at home. Today we have some books about Ireland, and they're from the Irish Tourist Board, so if there's anything that you'd like to know about Ireland, Irish holidays, you're very welcome to have a booklet. Would anybody like to ask some questions about anything in Ireland, food or anything? I'd be glad to tell you anything that you'd like to know. But Irish people are very friendly. Yes, sir, sorry.
What's the regular daily meal is like?
Depending on where you live, but mostly I'd say like America, it's cereals, but we use a lot of wheat meal. Bacon and egg, of course. And another thing you don't have here is things like black and white pudding, grilled or fried, and that's sold in most butchers, and it's very popular. And also it's sold in American places like Boston has a very high contingent of Irish people, and so all the things that are popular in Ireland. Actually, one of the big things that are imported into America for Boston are things like Irish sausages made by Denny's of Ireland. It's very big producing. And also we sell things like pig's feet and pig's head to all the Caribbean islands. I was surprised to be in a factory where they had these things being packed to be exported from Ireland, pigs' heads and pigs' feet. Anything else? No, that's all the time. That's
you're probably saying hog head cheese or
souse.
Right, no, that's... That's the staple diet of the Irish working people, or people who are farmers out in the country, is potatoes and cabbage and bacon, and mostly the things that are grown on your farm. There isn't anything else that they use, only what they grow in their own vicinity. And another thing that's wonderful about Ireland, it doesn't matter what time of the year you go to Ireland, we have, and also in the booklet you'll find it here, the Irish Tourist Board, you have to be a member of Board Fáilte to be represented, and they give all these places like one star, like we do here, two stars, but you can go and stay in a bed and breakfast home in Ireland, and for your breakfast you're going to get bacon and egg, and you're going to have Irish soda bread, or you're going to have Irish whole wheat bread. But the traditions in Ireland are longer. I wanted to count the religious holidays in Ireland, but I wasn't able. I couldn't remember them all. Anything else anybody would like to know? Thank you very much.
We'd like to thank our panel for the interesting information on holiday traditions. May Edith Rayum of White Springs, Patty Rang of St. Augustine, and Gloria Ramator of Jacksonville.
Thank you.
The next performer on this stage will be Dale, performers rather, will be Dale and Sue Weber of Odessa playing old-time banjo and 12-string guitar. We'll take just a few minutes for them to prepare and present Odessa, old-time banjo and 12-string guitar.
Thank you. It's good to be here. No rain. Isn't it nice? Now we just have to fight the heat.
To work with back there. And the theme of this is music that came from the British Isles and was filtered down through Appalachia and got to Florida. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to do Didn't He Ramble, which comes from the Charlie Poole Band that was recorded in about the middle of the 1920s. And this is a descendant of the English Darby Ram. Darby, the song about the Darby Ram, was about a huge ram that was butchered and what happened to the pieces, and it goes on and on. I don't know how many verses there are. But by the time they got it here and it got through the Southern Mountains process, it comes out about a young fellow that's kind of unruly in the adventures that happens to him. It's called Didn't He Ramble. My mother raised three grown sons, Buster, Bill, and me. Buster was the black sheep, our little family. My mother tried to break him of his rough and rowdy ways. Finally had to get the judge, give him 90 days, and didn't he ramble, ramble. in and out of the town. Well, didn't he ramble, ramble? Well, he rambled till them butchers cut him down. On the green, the gamblers there showed him a trick that he had never seen. He lost his rolling jewelry, he liked to lost his life. He lost the car that carried him there, and somebody stole his wife. And then he rambled, rambled, well, he rambled all around, in and out of the town. Well, didn't he ramble, ramble, well, he rambled till them butchers cut him down. In a swell hotel, his appetite was stout. When he refused to pay the bill, the landlord kicked him out. He reached a brick to smack him with, and when he went to stop, the landlord kicked him over a fence right in a barrel of slop. And then he rambled, rambled, well, he rambled all around, in and out of the town. Well, didn't he ramble, ramble, well, he rambled till them butchers cut him down.
A songwriter. I'm my fourth generation. There's four. Well, there's actually five generations of my family in Florida now, because I have three children that are grown, and hopefully we'll have six. But in the year 1912, my great-great-grandfather was the sheriff of Suwanee County. Samuel Holden Alford was his name. And I kind of got this next song from a little of what he lived through. He patrolled the county, Suwanee County, by horseback. And he was the only law in Suwanee County in that year. So this is called Rhythm of a Florida Song.
Born Samuel Holden Alford, 1881, sheriff of Suwanee County in the year 1912. Met and married Molly, bought a home and settled down in Brantford, a stone's throw from her hometown. He told me of my heritage from far and distant lands. A Scotch and Irish blood had come to stand on golden shore. How four generations marked their sojourn in the sand. Heartbeats in time to the rhythm of a Florida song. He said, child, listen well to the melody of the whippoorwill. Hear the music in the wind as it whistles through the hardwood pine. Her harmony's in your soul, and no matter where you go, your heart beats in time to the rhythm of a Florida song. Well, nothing stays the same. The shifting sands brought with them change. Few things remain of yesterday. A once thriving cracker town lies forgotten in the wake of marching time. When one could walk for miles down unspoiled country lanes and hear a cry of a panther in the wild. Grandpa and I listened as the night birds came to call. Hearts beat in time to the rhythm of the Florida song. Summer rain. It takes me back to Brantford.
Song, and she's also a fourth generation Florida cracker that really was raised up around Live Oak at first, right?
Right. Early childhood.
And so all of this is not just clear blue sky sort of thing. She's kind of the, I guess, the next to the current generation. We got a bunch of little fiddlers and banjo players running around here. That you probably noticed, they're the current crop, and they're doing real well. We're real proud of them. But Sue here is kind of where the music got to. Now, the music I do is old-time string band that was popular all through the 1800s, and it's the distillation of the Scotch and Irish and British music that came here. And it's also the music that has evolved straight into bluegrass. Well, except for some of that wild, crazy electronic type stuff. But what I call real bluegrass, that's just the direct descendant of old-time string band. And a lot of that deals with people. They were real interested in people. Courting songs and songs about domestic bliss or the lack thereof, whatever. I guess you could call it a courting song, couldn't you?
I think so.
Called Buffalo Boy, and I'm in the wrong tuning. I'm in the wrong key. I'm in the wrong everything. Which kind of seems to be endemic of banjos. I don't know why that is. But I guess if you're going to... Well, I know what it is. I don't have enough range in my voice, so I've got to get in various keys to pull it off at all. You notice I don't bill myself as a singer? No way. This is called Billy Grant. No, this is called Buffalo Boy. I was looking at the wrong part of the. Yeah, let's do Buffalo Boy.
Well, when you come and you see me, when you come and you see me, my dear old Buffalo Boy.
I reckon I'll come on Sunday. Reckon I'll come on Sunday if the weather be good.
How long you gonna call me?
I reckon I'll court you all day. Reckon I'll court you all day if the weather be good.
Well, when we gonna get married? When we gonna get married, my dear old Buffalo?
I guess we'll marry in a week. Guess we'll marry in a week if the weather be good. I reckon I'll bring my log sled. Reckon I'll bring my log sled if the weather be good.
Why don't you bring your buggy?
buggy, no buggy, no buggy. My ox won't pull no buggy, not even if the weather be good.
Well, who's gonna come to the wedding, the wedding, the wedding? Who's gonna come to the wedding, my dear old Buffalo boy?
I guess I'll bring my children, my children, my children. Guess I'll bring my children, if the weather be good. Oh, yes, I have five children, five children, five children. Yes, I have five children, six if the weather be good.
Well, there ain't gonna be no wedding, no wedding, no wedding. There ain't gonna be no wedding, even if the weather be good.
Can't win them all.
Domestic bliss is not like that.
I'm going to tell you a little bit about banjos here in a while. But banjos are, maybe I'll do that right now. Banjos are never in tune. Banjos exist in various states of untune. And what you want to do is minimize that. Now, if you ever run across a banjo player that says his banjo is in tune, you better watch him because he's liable to fib about other things too. Hi, Whitey. Now, that wasn't sequential there, you understand that. Speaking of domestic bliss, here is an alternative approach to domestic bliss. It's called Little Sod Shanty, and sometimes it's subtitled Stern Old Bachelor. The story tells the rest of it. Oh, man. My minimum is kind of wide today. That's funny, you move it just a little bit, and where it was low, now it's high, and there's no
in between.
There's a section there that doesn't exist. I never did understand that. I am a stern old bachelor. My age is 44. I do declare I'll never live with women anymore. I have a stove that's worth 10 cents, a table worth 15. I cook my gruel in oyster cans and keep my things so clean. Oh, little sod shanty, little sod shanty dear to me. I am a stern old bachelor from matrimony. Night when I come home, I smile and walk right in. I never hear a voice yell out or say,
where you been?
On a cold and stormy night, in a cozy little shack, I sing my songs and think my thoughts with no one to talk back. Oh, little sod shanty, little sod shanty dear to me. I am a stern old bachelor from matrimony free. I go to bed whenever I please, and get up just the same.
You always forget the word.
That's the one. I go to bed whenever I please, and get up just the same. I change my socks 3 times a year with no one to complain. At night when I'm in peaceful sleep, my snores can do no harm. I never have to walk the floor with a baby in my arms. Oh, little sod shanty, little sod shanty dear to me. I am a stern old bachelor from matrimony free. And when I die and go to heaven, as all good bachelors do,
sure they do,
I'll never have to grieve for fear my wife will get there too. Oh, little sod shanty, little sod shanty dear to me. I am a stern old bachelor from matrimony free. Oh, little sod shanty, little sod shanty dear to me.
I am a stern old bachelor from matrimony free.
It happens if you're left with six children, right?
You know, maybe I better explain something right here. It seems like an opportune moment. She's not my wife. She is my daughter-in-law. And there's been some confusion on that point, but I wanted to clear that up real well. Yeah. She's not a nag. She's just taking care of me, telling me, you know, get your capo, dummy. C, let's go to D. And I'll tell you what, that sure does help things. Would you believe I solo every once in a while? Good. I guess you could call this accordion song too, couldn't you? Okay, now this one has more of an English ring to it than anything, because at one point it talks about 600 yearly, and that's well understood to be 600 pounds sterling yearly. And the era in which this song was written, I think a pound sterling was worth about $5.50 in American gold. So 600 yearly was a tidy sum. And you don't know what the heck I'm talking about, but the song will explain that in rather graphic terms. I mean, it really gets it on there.
That's not much money.
Oh, there's one other thing. I want you to listen. Have you ever heard a banjo played angry? I'm going to try, because that would be... In this little scenario here, daughter, played appropriately by Sue, comes to Papa, played by me. We tried it the other way, but it didn't work too good. So we settled on this way. And with a story of a new... this is a term that some of you may be able to relate to. She comes to me with a tale of a new significant other. You've heard that. Well, that's what this is about, so let's just go ahead and do it and see what happens here.
Tomorrow morning I'll be 16 and Billy Grimes' brother. It's about to question to me, Pa, my lover. Now he'll be here in the morning, Pa, he'll be here quite early. Take a plant and walk with me across the fields of barley.
Oh, daughter dear, you shall not go, there is no need in talking. You shall not go with Billy Grimes across the fields of walking. Imagine such presumption to the dirty, ugly rover. I wonder where your pride has gone to think of such a lover.
Oh, Papa dear, I must confess that Billy is quite clever. With an ounce of gold he won't be found in this wide world over.
Oh, daughter dear, I am surprised at your infatuation. To think of having Billy Grimes would be ruination.
Oh, Papa dear, old Grimes is dead and Billy is the only surviving heir to all that's left, about 6,000 yearly.
Oh, daughter dear, I did not hear your last remark quite clearly, but Billy is a fine young man, no doubt loves you dearly.
Thank you.
Yeah, the secret word, poverty, right. On the hip. How are we doing on? Okay, yeah, we got a little time here. Now, this one has got a long history, because you remember the whistling gypsy, the gypsy rover, long, beautiful English ballad, right? Whistling Gypsy came over the hill. That's about all I know of it.
There was a Gypsy of David.
And about 18 other titles. This thing has been tracked back to 1640. That's the first time that it appeared in broadside. But as it filtered down through the southern mountains, it took on some characteristics. It got shorter, and it got faster, and it kind of took on a hard edge that I suspect reflected the hard life in the southern mountains. And we learned this from a Carter family recording, and it's called Blackjack David. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
1, 2, 3. Wait.
Oh,
two fingers.
Let's try it again.
Take two. 1, 2, 3.
Blackjack David came running through the woods, and he sang so loud and gaily, made the hills all around him ring, and he charmed the heart of a lady, charmed the heart of a lady.
Would you forsake your husband and baby to go with another man? Would you forsake your husband and babe for the love of the Blackjack David? For the love of Blackjack David?
Yes, I'd forsake my husband and baby to go with another man. I'd forsake my husband and baby for the love of Blackjack David.
She pulled off her high heel shoes that are made of Spanish leather. She put on her low heel shoes and they both rode off together. They both rode off together.
When you mentioned terminal, well, that's what's happening to the Florida panther. I had the great pleasure of seeing one in the wild about 6 years ago on a by road in Sanford. And I was really taken with the beauty of the Florida panther. There's not too many left. I think the number's under 50 now. Anyway, I wrote this song, and it has an original title. It's called The Florida Panther. And I would like to do that one for you.
And the marshy lines of the Everglades, deep in the cypress trees, if you search the grass, well, you might find one of the lads of the Florida cats. He's among the last of his family. He has become an endangered species. If we look away, he'll become and the Florida panther we'll no longer see. What will you tell the children when they ask you why part of their heritage did not survive? Oh, can you find it in your heart?
the Spanish balls draped on the rival trees, part of the white land marshes of the Everglades. His blood flows through the veins of the coastal waterway. He's a part of Florida, just like you and me. Like the Spanish balls draped on the rival trees, part of the
performed with Dale. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like a pet, a favorite.
I think we're out of time.
Okay.
I do believe.
Well, I think that worked out pretty good.
It did.
Thank you all for...